I'd like to thank the conference organizers for this opportunity. I'm Ada Adamora from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where I am professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases. I'd like to thank the conference organizers for this opportunity to present, and also to acknowledge my co-authors, who are the Reverend Moses Goldman, Dr. Tamara Coyne-Beasley, Catalina Ramirez, who was instrumental in the presentation, Leonard Williams, whose name was inadvertently left off of the written program, the Reverend Danny Ellis, Reverend Joseph Stevenson, Reverend Jerry Williams, and Deanne Francis. The title of this presentation is Not Preaching to the Choir, Using Sermons as an HIV Prevention Tool in Black Churches. I have no disclosures. As you know, racial disparities in HIV infection in the U.S. are quite striking. African Americans account for only about 14% of the total population in the U.S., but 44% of people with newly diagnosed HIV infection in the nation, and the disparities in heterosexual HIV transmission are probably even more striking. We adapted the proximate determinants framework as a conceptual model for this research. Sexual network patterns are proximate determinants of the spread of HIV throughout the population. Causal pathways between sexual network patterns that promote HIV transmission and adverse contextual factors, for example, neighborhood poverty, low ratio of men to women, have become increasingly clear. Beneficial contextual factors that decrease risky sexual behaviors and network patterns could conceivably decrease HIV transmission. Religion is one example of a contextual or cultural factor that could influence proximate determinants such as sexual network patterns. Several studies have found that adolescents with religious involvement are less likely to have had sex. There's one study of mostly African American women and found that the more religious women were, the less they tended to be involved in high-risk HIV-related behaviors. Similarly, black women who attended religious services more than monthly were less likely to have had more than one sex partner in the previous 3 months. Religion is a major social, cultural, and also contextual force among blacks in the U.S. African Americans are among the most religious ethnic groups in the industrialized world, and this is especially true of black people in the South. Although black church leaders have been criticized for their response to the AIDS epidemic, most do perceive HIV as an important health problem. Studies have shown that black church leaders recognize the need for HIV prevention in their communities and often want more information about the disease. Several black churches in a survey of northern black churches reported programs that addressed human sexuality, AIDS education, and pregnancy prevention. So these are special programs, but what about worship in general and the sermon, which is a routine part of just about every service? The sermon has been called a focal point of worship in the black church, and it's typically more important in black churches than in other churches. So given the large number of African Americans who attend church at least weekly, and the emphasis on the sermon, we sought to work with pastors to incorporate HIV prevention messages into sermons as a way of reaching large numbers of people, including those who were at risk, but not reached by traditional HIV prevention messages, and also about as a way of beginning the dialogue concerning sexual behavior in the church. So here were the specific aims. One was to determine barriers to pastors' incorporation of HIV heterosexual prevention messages into their sermons. So we restricted all of this research to heterosexual prevention messages because prior work had indicated that some pastors would be much less willing to talk about homosexuality in this setting, and also because discussions of homosexuality were highly likely to stir up controversy and decrease the productivity of the whole project. Secondly, to develop culturally appropriate HIV prevention messages for pastors to use in their sermons that would be consistent with pastors' religious beliefs and public health research findings as well. And third, to determine the acceptability and feasibility of pastors incorporating into their sermons the messages they develop. So first, the personnel. All three of the co-investigators have connections to both academia and, at least loosely, to the church, meaning that at least Well, they go to church, at least. A critical factor is that one of them, Dr. Moses Goldman, who's a co-investigator, is senior pastor of the Black Church in Durham, North Carolina, and also faculty at Shaw University Divinity School and adjunct faculty at the University of North Carolina School of Public Health. Dr. Coyne Beasley, a UNC pediatrician and epidemiologist, has done research with Black churches. The UNC-Shaw University partnership that was the backbone of this project had previously convened the Carolina Shaw Church Network, which is an internet-linked network of about 20 North Carolina Black churches that expressed an interest in public health research that benefits Black communities. Using these networks and contacts, we invited pastors of Black churches that are located within a 90-mile radius of Raleigh, North Carolina, to two informational meetings where we discussed the problem of HIV in Black communities and outlined the project. And so here's what we asked them to do. This is actually straight from the flyer from that first meeting. We asked them to attend information sessions to learn about the project and HIV among North Carolina African Americans, to recruit other pastors to participate themselves in a 90-minute individual interview that they would get $50 for, and that would ask them their thoughts about inclusion of topics related to sexual behaviors in sermons, be on a steering committee to guide the project, and participate in monthly workshops for about 30 months or so. Specifically, they were asked to develop behavioral messages for sermons, not necessarily HIV messages. That's a mistake. Specifically, refine topic selection, identify scriptures, links, draft messages, and select message format. And the project staff were to take notes and record the workshops to document the ideas and the sermons that were developed. And so this was the content of the structured interviews. They concerned demographic information about the church and the pastor for each person, each pastor. The topics were dating, marriage, romance, infidelity, and monogamy, abstinence, sexual practices, condom use, and birth control, among some others. The interview asked pastors the following about these topics: whether pastors believed these topics should be included in the sermons, if they have discussed them in a sermon during the past year, whether they believe other pastors discuss them in sermons, and what makes it hard or easy to discuss them in sermons. We did this work largely through dinner meetings with the work group. Meetings were usually led by Pastor Goldman. They began and ended with a prayer. We then had some combination of the following activities. We had talks, which are about epidemiology of HIV infection or social factors that promote HIV in Black communities, adolescent behavior, substance use, updates from the academic conferences like the International AIDS Conference. These talks were usually led either by the academic co-investigators or occasionally by a pastor with knowledge about the topic. For example, one pastor did have knowledge about substance use, and he led that. We also presented vignettes that illustrated risky situations relevant to the lives of congregation members. And the group brainstormed about topics and found relevant scriptures that could be linked to these topics. We also presented examples and bullets of messages to communicate in sermons. The pastors sometimes broke out into small groups to develop the sermon outlines and sermons, but really they usually actually wrote the full sermons at home and then presented them at the next meeting, where meeting participants offered comments and critiques. And there was also, in general, just a lot of general discussion. So concerning the results, well, first the results of the interviews, these were qualitative interviews, and they were taped and recorded and transcribed according to the usual methods. Pastors who participated in the interviews were mostly male. 75% were at least 45 years old. 85% had completed college, and more than half of them had a graduate degree. Two-thirds were bivocational. Two-thirds had churches in rural areas. Most of these churches were small, that is, less than 200 congregation members for Sunday, although two were much larger, including one with about 6,000 members. So here are the results of the interviews. Pastors expressed really quite diverse beliefs, and it's actually rather difficult to summarize them, especially since some of them hadn't thought a lot about these issues before the interview, and actually evolved their beliefs, it appeared, during the course of the interview. In general, they thought that many of these topics should be discussed in sermons, especially dating, marriage, romance, infidelity, monogamy, and abstinence. And many of them indicated that they talked about these topics to some degree in their own sermons, and some thought that other pastors talked about them as well. Among those who did not talk about these topics, a common reason was that they just really hadn't thought of doing it, especially because, given the predominance of elderly people in their congregations, they just didn't perceive it as a need. There was considerable variability in their thoughts about the appropriateness of the other topics, especially sexual practices, condom use, and birth control. Some pastors thought the topics were appropriate for sermons, and a minority actually did talk about them themselves, they said. Some indicated that they were uncertain how to incorporate them into a sermon. Very few thought that other people talked about these topics, or other pastors, rather. A substantial proportion indicated that they wouldn't mind talking about them during the course of individual counseling sessions or workshops where people had an opportunity to interact and ask questions, but they didn't feel they were appropriate for a sermon. Most pastors tended to agree that they would not discuss condoms or birth control during a sermon. Very few were actually opposed to contraception, but rather, because a central theologic tenet that they all adhered to, subscribed to, was that sexual activity should occur only during marriage, meant they tended to feel that telling people to use condoms contradicted their beliefs. Other barriers to inclusion of these topics in sermons included lack of knowledge, and also concern that there's little scriptural basis to found a sermon on to talk about some of these things, especially things like contraception. The major facilitators for discussing topics in sermons among pastors who indicated belief that these topics were appropriate and or that they were willing to or had discussed them in sermons were biblical support, that is, scriptural texts that address these issues even indirectly, and also their perception that the topic is relevant to their congregation, and third, in a few cases, their own education, knowledge, and experience. We met monthly between September 2008 and about August 2010. 26 pastors attended one or more meetings, 18 attended two or more, and there was a core group of about seven that attended many more. An average of about seven pastors were in attendance at each meeting. More than 17 sermons and sermon outlines were developed, and they fell into the following general categories: dating and marriage, sexual risk behaviors, and choices and behaviors and relationships and the consequences of these choices, and compassion for people living with HIV. They usually delivered the sermons as soon as they wrote them, and here are a few selected quotes from three different pastors' sermons. The first says, "Don't be careless, casual, or lazy about sex. Protect yourself at all times. If you yield to sexual desire, use barrier protection." Another said, "Our bodies belong to God and need to be pure. Sin separates us from God. May I remind you, HIV is a health crisis for African Americans. Christians should seek to know God's will for every life situation." And the third said, "If you're in this room and you want life and that more abundantly, brother, you need to be very careful about what you do with your seed. You see, we've got this seed, gentlemen, but we don't value it. We throw it anywhere. Anybody that wants it can have it." I'm going to play a clip from a sermon given by one of the participants in the workshops, who, in the interest of full disclosure, is my pastor, who is the inspiration for this proposal. So I thought of it because of what I saw him doing in a sermon several years ago. This is Pastor Andy Thompson from World Overcomers Christian Church in Durham, North Carolina. And he gave this sermon in the fall of 2011. Oh, God.
Around the pool, on the edge. I'm a beautiful, but in the pool.
some of you didn't go to church on Sunday, so you feel okay about that. The pastors did, as I said, in fact, preach the sermons they wrote, and they got positive feedback from the congregation. They enjoyed the workshops, and especially they found the new materials and education really valuable. They also enjoyed the interaction and fellowship with each other about these topics and the relationship of these topics to sermons. They wanted to continue the work groups, disseminate the sermons, and assess the effectiveness of the sermons. The group agreed that the best way to disseminate the sermons was to put them on a website with links to resources such as the Black AIDS Institute, Baum and Gilead, the CDC website, AIDS.gov. And so that's what we did, and here's a screenshot of the project website. The study faced several challenges. The extent to which these results are generalizable to other pastors really is not clear. Some of the pastors we worked with, although theologically conservative, they're very well-educated, highly motivated group who could probably be considered early adopters. Developing messages that address sexual behaviors as opposed to simply addressing compassion was actually quite challenging for some of the people. There are also potential pitfalls. You can't guarantee the fidelity of this intervention, and there is a potential for developing stigmatizing or factually incorrect messages. It's important to remember, though, that these are not health education messages, they're sermons. The effectiveness of the sermons in changing attitudes and behaviors is unclear, and it depends on a variety of factors, especially those related to the preacher and the listener. Not everyone will immediately or perhaps ever preach dynamic sermons, and those may not be appropriate for all congregations anyway. Nevertheless, it's an important start to the conversation between church leaders and congregations about sexual behaviors and human interactions. So I think that sermons may be a successful HIV prevention strategy for reaching larger numbers of people. The pastors ultimately concluded that it was important to address issues related to heterosexual behaviors and were motivated to develop the sermons. As I said, they generally preached them before the project ended, usually immediately, and said they plan to continue incorporating these messages into their sermons. So in conclusion, I'd say that academic faith partnerships could be a low-cost component of a combination HIV prevention package. So was this successful? Well, this is what one pastor said in the follow-up interview. The Word of God reaches the thoughts of the mind, the intents of the heart. It's the only thing that does that. The Word of God has the power to transform us by the way we think. It is able to save your soul, not in the sense of soul salvation, but it delivers you from the way you think, the way you feel, your desires. So I think HIV prevention via sermons can be very powerful, very powerful. I'd like to again acknowledge my co-authors, who are again Reverend Moses Goldman, Dr. Tamara Coyne Beasley, Catalina Ramirez, Leonard Williams, Reverend Danny Ellis, Reverend Joseph Stevenson, Reverend Jerry Williams, and Deanne Francis, and certainly to thank and acknowledge all of the work group pastors, the many pastors who participated in this, again, Pastor Andy Thompson, who was the inspiration for it, Dr. Paul Godley, who is the PI for the overall project, Project Export, Carol Burt and Leon Parker, who helped with the interviews and a lot of the work, and finally, the funders. And with that, thank you. So, thank you. So, again, I'm sorry we have no moderator, and I just sort of assumed the role. I think there's time for questions about this and all the other presentations. Well, actually, there isn't time, but maybe we'll take it until somebody throws us out. If the other presenters would like to come up here, and we'll take questions for a couple minutes. First question? Okay. Can you say your name and where you're from, please? So the question was whether the various denominations that the pastors belong to affected the barriers and facilitators, and also whether their views vary depending upon the ages of the congregation. So I have to say we didn't actually analyze the interviews according to the differences that denominations made. And in fact, in looking at those transcripts, I actually don't think they necessarily did. We sort of lumped together, and it was fairly difficult to analyze, I thought, lumped together their reasons, and those were the major categories of reasons for barriers and facilitators. The age of the congregation certainly did make a huge difference, for several reasons. One, because a lot of them had very elderly people in their church. So they didn't think this stuff was relevant. They also sometimes didn't think the people would be, take it well. However, what I stressed was that a lot of these older people, well, number one, some of them actually were at risk because a lot of them were had multiple partnerships. In addition, they all had some young people, and many of those young people got pregnant. I mean, like teenagers. In addition, a lot of the older people took care of younger people, and they could disseminate these messages. It was actually a big part of the point that I didn't have time to get into. Astonishingly, something that none of them ever said in any of the interviews, except sort of for Pastor Andy Thompson, it never seemed to occur to them that this would be a way to get younger people in the church. It, for some reason, that just didn't seem to have occurred to them. So that's the answer to that question. Are there any questions about this or the other presentation? Uh-huh. So the question was, do we have plans to expand this to mosques? Well, first of all, there are very, very few, we did this in the South, in North Carolina, and there are very few mosques there. In fact, there is somebody whom I work with closely who does belong to the Nation of Islam, and he is more tightly connected socially and professionally to these pastors than anybody I've ever seen. But, we were working with pastors of black Christian churches, and they just weren't very, they would have been welcome to join, but I guess it might have worked out, but there are very few in North Carolina. This is within a range of, 90-mile range of Raleigh, so we didn't do that. Over here, huh? I think that's a good idea. Your question relates to developing messages that can be disseminated in venues other than church. Is that what you...
Yeah, or is it right, other than church but are not totally dissociated from church.
That are related, uh-huh. So that's certainly an interesting idea. I hadn't thought of that. The reason I thought of sermons, I guess this is the last thing I'll say about mine, then other people can... The reason I thought of this was because, the church that I go to is actually quite huge. And I noticed the pastor giving a message. He was not actually even talking about HIV. I think he was talking about some religious concept, and then he suddenly started talking about sex. And I noticed that he was actually probably inadvertently delivering messages that related to sexual networks in the course of talking about something else. And I also noted this church has a ton of young people, as you could probably see from the video, and they're sitting there taking notes, just listening to him. I thought, well, I'll be. Now, and these people, they're here every Sunday, and this is a captive audience. Wouldn't it be interesting if other people could do that? So that was why I focused on the idea of sermons, because it's free. I mean, you know, and they and the pastors are typically, they're looking for new things to talk about. That was actually one reason why they liked this, because it gave them new material. And these were all people, they were very highly educated, you know, sort of intellectually curious group of people. So I'd be happy to, if there are people who have questions about other presentations, I'd be we can have time for a couple of minutes perhaps, and I'd be happy to talk with people, you know, outside off the podium. Any other questions for other presenters?
I'd like to provide those phones and transportation cards.